And here we are for Off the Hook Overtime, where we hope that we're on YouTube. We don't have Rob here this week, who tells us. It's one of his jobs to tell us that we're actually on YouTube. But I think we'll find out in short order if we're not. Somebody will tell us. You know, that was a tough hour. I can't believe it went by so fast, but I feel like we said things that needed to be said, and I'm happy that you guys are here to share that. Don't switch your microphone off, and that won't happen.
There's just a lot to talk about.
There is, yes.
And I don't know how to really characterize it or sum it up. There's a lot of other things I was thinking and asking myself, like, you know, what sanctions were being violated by North Korea before this? What will be violated now and what after? You know, any less or any more? I just don't feel like, you know, we fix things. That's kind of what I was going
with. I don't want to get into the particulars too much, but suffice to say that anything that Virgil shared with them, they already knew. You know, they being the country in general, because not everybody in North Korea is an automaton that is, you know, basically a Borg collective. maybe somebody in a room actually didn't know something that somebody else in the next room did know and was just curious. It's really innocuous. It's really nothing major, nothing you could not find on the internet. But when you say it out loud, it can sound bad. It can sound as if you're up to something much more nefarious than simply having a conversation. And when you're in North Korea, it's a good idea to have conversations. You don't want to be antisocial. They don't like that. And you see what they do to people they don't like. That's what I was worried about.
That's what I have trouble with the most, and just I feel like it is in perspective. And, you know, we're worse off, I think, as a nation in some ways. I think his situation is much worse off in light of the recent news, and the other places that are taking on digital currency, that are using it for good, they miss out on learning and hearing more about how they can use it and you know, change their circumstances in unstable places and so forth. So I just really feel like the mission and the good intentions are really lost, and that's important to remember in thinking about it.
Well,
it
makes me think when you say that, if he had basically had the same conversation 100 miles away, how far is Pyongyang from the border? 200 miles away, it wouldn't be an issue at all. Would not even be noticed, because of course everybody knows these things already. It's, you know, obviously he made a mistake by going there in the first place, and he has acknowledged that. And I just hope we put things in perspective. I really do. Now, thank you, Junes, by the way, for confirming that we are in fact on YouTube, and that's always good to know. Alex, did you want to add anything else before we open up to phone lines and maybe read some other stories?
Yeah, sure. One thing, and I don't want to speculate about the charges, but I will stick to the facts and the pleadings in this case. And you mentioned something that was interesting, Emmanuel, which was, you know, that whether Virgil had helped North Korea in any way or given them some kind of knowledge, but what's very interesting about this, and you can go back to some of the filings in this case. I'll point, you know, directly to the government's motion in limine. And the government had, in that motion, had referenced the stipulation that they made with the defense. And it was a very important stipulation. A stipulation is essentially an agreement as to a particular fact, right? So that you don't have to prove that fact at trial. It's not contested in a similar way. You can both stipulate to a certain fact, and the fact that was stipulated to by the government and by the defense was this, that Virgil's presentation in North Korea didn't benefit the government of North Korea by giving them any information that they didn't already know.
So, you know, in my untrained mind, I ask the question, then what is this all about? If he didn't say anything that benefited them in any way, is it just about going there without permission? Is that what this is?
No. No, the hair that was being split was for it wasn't to the benefit of North Korea, but the government did claim that what Virgil said could have benefited certain members of the audience that were North Koreans over there, and therefore could have, you know, and you got to remember too, it was a conspiracy charge too. So it wasn't, you know, to actually have violated the sanctions. It was a conspiracy to violate the sanctions is the charge to what he pleaded.
Well, hang on. If it's a conspiracy, there are other conspirators, and who are those other conspirators?
That's right.
Have they been
charged? These other conspirators were—they're named in there were CCs, co-conspirators 1 through 6 in the pleadings. Their names and identities are not known to the public.
Okay, but I assume they're known to the government. Are they being charged with something too, or are they simply being ignored because they're only after this one person?
As far as I know, nobody else is charged.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. But again, untrained. I don't know the legal...
Yeah, there's certain things I can't talk about.
Of course.
And
so
obviously, and you know, I got to respect those parameters. But I think this is an important stipulation and something to keep in mind when assessing Virgil's character. Is that, you know, this wasn't about, you know, major transfer of knowledge. And the government stipulated that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I very much hope that that stipulated fact, and the government agreed with that, will go a long way at sentencing as well. I certainly hope so. I think it should factor into the severity of what we're talking about here. And again, I you know, I'm not my usual gregarious self here, because there is a lot of parameters on it, and also it's just it's difficult. It's
mm-hmm.
difficult to talk about this.
Of course, it's difficult for all of us, and I can't even imagine what it's like for his family, and of course for him. But you know, if the co-conspirators are ever known, I'll bet anything these are academics. These are people that you would talk to about theoretical things, about problem solving, about the sorts of things that Virgil was so impassioned about, and nothing beyond that. Not criminals, not people meeting in back alleys or anything like that. Just intellectual challenge. We have a phone call, but I just want to get to another story just for a brief moment, just so I can say I've read more than one story tonight. China is announcing a complete ban on cryptocurrency. So, you know, it's not just the United States that is in a panic. It's also China. According to a notice published on the central bank's website, it will be illegal for Chinese residents to purchase cryptocurrencies from overseas and even be involved in marketing or technical support related to crypto businesses. So, you know, the kind of thing that's happening to Virgil right now, it's the kind of thing I would expect in China. I would expect somebody to be prosecuted for speaking, you know, at a conference, for saying something. And if that were the case, I'll bet that our media would be covering it in a completely different way, saying, wow, look at that oppressive regime and how they're treating somebody who was just answering questions. You know, I'm sure there are many instances we can point to over there. And it's just sad that this is lost on so many people.
Yes.
All right. Shall we take a phone call? Oh, you know, we didn't put the phone number out. How are they calling if we didn't give the phone number out?
Do you want to start over?
No.
I didn't even listen. I don't know. It might be a robot.
It could be a robot. It could be Google spam. It could be all sorts of things. But I should give the phone number out for those people that...
I think it's around here somewhere.
...are playing by the rules. It's 802... And then some more digits after that, I think.
321.
Liftoff. No, I'm sorry. 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK. 4225 spells out HACK if you have one of those phones with letters on them. Do people still have those? For some reason, I think our cell phones all have letters on them.
Yeah, sometimes when you get a keypad on the phone, I think it puts... the letters.
Yeah, it's a connection to the past.
There.
Yeah.
It's simulated.
Yeah. See, they haven't gotten rid of that. They're getting rid of the landlines, but they're not getting rid of the letters next to the numbers. You know, because they realize that that serves a purpose. Now, if only they could realize that for the landlines, I think we wouldn't be in such dire straits all the time. Anyway, let's get to this phone call. good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hey, Rebel. How are you doing?
So I was just, Mickey, you were talking about China banning cryptocurrency. I don't blame them because, you know, there's been a lot of scams, you know, like people that say, you know, hack your website or whatever and say, you know, just send us cryptocurrency. So I don't blame them for. But anyway, speaking of scams, how I get a lot of emails, like junk mail, that comes into my trash box, not my inbox or my spam box. It goes into my trash box, and it's spam that they don't go, it's not user at gmail.com or yahoo.com. It's user at AOL.com, and I don't have an account on AOL. And when I go to my username at AOL.com, or it doesn't work. It sends it back. So how do they get the email to me when they say that it's at AOL.com? You know, I'll say, I'll send a message to 2600 at, no, Emmanuel at AOL.com, and it'll go to the 2600.com site.
I'm not exactly sure what the issue is. You're saying you're getting mail to an AOL account that you don't have.
Right.
Okay.
Now, in other words, if I send a mail, an email to Emmanuel at 2600.com, it'll go to you. But if I send it to Emmanuel at AOL.com, it'll go to you, but, you know, it'll say that you haven't.
Wait, it shouldn't. Well, okay, hold on a second. There's a couple. First of all, yeah, it may go to me. It doesn't mean I'm going to read it. Okay. But it's possible that the at AOL.com is a leftover from Instant Messenger, AIM, which was America Online that ran that.
Right.
And they might have given out an address by default, and that might be what you're seeing here.
Yeah, but why is it going into the trash box? It doesn't go into my inbox or the spam.
Well, that could we're talking about Gmail, right?
Gmail, I think it's Gmail, yeah.
Okay, sometimes Gmail.
Well, I don't actually, you know what? I have a Yahoo account and a Gmail account, and I don't know which it's.
Okay, whatever it is. It could be. It could be Yahoo, it could be Gmail, it could be mine. What's that one?
MSN.
Yeah, MSN or Hotmail, whatever. Sometimes these companies, they have fights with other companies, and they say, okay, from now on, all your mail is going to go into trash. So it could be something like that. Or it could be because it's coming from a particular address format that they don't like that's associated with spam. Like, for instance, the default email address you get from your cable company. Sometimes those are attached to spam. So, you know, things like that. It's possible.
Okay. All right. So but it may be like, hide it, like they'll say to unsubscribe, click here, and I click here, and they're expecting me to put my email address at gmail.com or yahoo.com. But when I look at who it's coming from or going to, it says at AOL.com, and I put my address at my name at username at AOL.com. So you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But you know. I don't know. I don't have a ready answer for it. I do know that if you give out a particular on Gmail, if you insert a period anywhere in your username, it doesn't do anything. You'll still get the mail. But if you give that address out to other people, then you'll know who it is that gave your address to somebody else, if you keep track of it that way. That's my handy tip for the day.
Okay. So username dot at.
Let's say your name is rebel at gmail.com, and sorry for whoever rebel at gmail.com is, but you could do r period ebel at gmail.com. It would still go to rebel at gmail.com.
Oh.
And then you can put a period anywhere, or you can put multiple periods. The periods aren't really part of the address, but they are able to be used.
Okay.
I hope that helps.
I miss operators and, you know, pay phones and you know, computer terminals. And by the way, at the Hope, are you going to have a Hope conference this summer?
Yes.
A live in-person.
We are having a new Hope in July. The details are at hope.net. Well, we'll have more details in the weeks ahead, but we are planning
it. The 2600 meeting.
The 2600 meeting, you know, I forgot to mention that. They're coming up this Friday in the city, I believe, outside at the atrium, 3rd Avenue and 53rd Street, I believe, on the other side of 2nd.
So it's still outside.
Avenue.
It's not, because they redid the Citigroup thing.
Yeah, did they ever open it again?
Yeah, it is open. It's like restaurants and like a Whole Food thing.
Well, we're half a block we're half a block away now. And by the way, if there are other meetings out there that are not listed currently at our meeting page, 2600.com/meetings, write to us, meetings@2600.com, or tweet at 2600meetings, and we'll be happy to get you listed for this coming Friday and for Fridays beyond that.
And you may want to meetings@AOL.com, and it may still go to you.
I don't know about that. I don't think that will go to us. But you're welcome to try.
But it's not going to be in person, so you can't go inside anymore? Is that it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the plan is, but the meetings start outside, so we'll figure it out from there.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. And hopefully at the health conference in July or whenever you have it, you'll have computer, like old, I know they have the retro computing.
That's up to people participating and making that happen. I have every confidence that will be the case.
I hope that they bring in old computer terminals.
Well, St. John's is a great place for this kind of thing, and we're really looking forward to using that space for the first time.
Oh, by the way, speaking of things, your radio station is not at the – okay, you used to be at – when you were at 120 Wall Street and on 8th Avenue, you used to broadcast from the Empire State Building, but when you were on – but since you moved to Brooklyn, you broadcast from the – Times Square. Why is that?
Well, okay. First of all, it has nothing to do with moving to Brooklyn. It has to do with the Empire State Building charging a huge amount of money and us not being able to afford to pay it. So, the Times Square location is cheaper. It's a little bit lower, so the signal doesn't go quite as far. But you should feel no difference in the New York metropolitan area.
Right. I see. So, but when you were on Wall Street, you were still broadcasting from the Empire State Building, right?
Yes, that is true.
So you moved from 8th Avenue to Wall Street.
It was a different period. It was a different time then, Rebel. Totally different.
Right. Right, I know. And because I know, like, if you go out to, like, the other parts of the country, like the Midwest and all, like, small cities, like, you'll see radio stations, but the antennas will be these big, like, maybe, I don't know how tall they are, 300 feet or 400 or 500 feet that you'll see going down the highway, and you'll see them, like, lit up at night, and you'll see how tall they are because they have these big red lights and blinking and white lights.
Interesting. All right, we're going to move on. But thanks for your call.
Okay.
Good hearing from you as always. Now, Kyle, maybe you could share with us what's going on here because you've been tearing apart the whole board trying. Alex, you can't hear the phone calls, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I can't hear.
You can hear me, though, right?
I can hear you, but I couldn't hear Rebel. I could hear him very, very faintly, and then I realized I was hearing him through your microphone because the sound was, I guess, bleeding out of your headphones.
Well, he's a loud talker, so maybe that's what was happening.
Yeah, he's a loud talker.
Oh, are you sure you don't have a Rebel filter? Some people have that, and that makes it hard to...
It's part of my web browser, actually. It's the Rebel filter. But no, I could have heard what Rebel was saying. It's always something interesting.
Let those third graders do a show on our board, and they messed up the
Can you turn the level on that up? And
on what up?
On the phone. And, Alex, do you hear a dial tone?
Okay, first of all, if I do that, make sure the phone's off the hook. Otherwise, we'll get a horrible noise. So give me the signal, and I'll bring it up.
Okay.
Yeah, haven't given me the signal yet.
It's off the hook.
Okay. I don't hear a dial tone.
That seems horrible.
No.
Well, maybe because somebody was there. Dial. Maybe that's why. should I bring it up now? Kyle, you got to give me an answer. Yes or no? Should I bring it up now?
No.
No, okay. Well, Alex, I guess we could banter back and forth while we figure out what's going on with the phone and why it no longer works.
Yeah.
On the board.
Okay, try it now.
Try it now, you say. Okay. Yeah, there's a dial tone. Do you hear the dial tone?
I hear it.
So you can hear dial tones, but just not Rebel. Is that what I'm led to understand?
That's right.
If you hear the dial tone, there's no reason on earth you won't hear another caller. All right. So 802-321-4225. Thank you, Kyle, for whatever it is you did.
I think there was a monitor switch that was routing the telephone channel to a different... you know, it's not important.
Next time we let third graders use the board, they have to put it back the way it was, or they're not allowed in here anymore.
They need to learn to normalize.
Yeah, yeah. As they are taught every day in school. I'm sorry, Alex. You were saying something before I really interrupted you. And we're getting a phone call.
We should have another caller.
Yes.
I would love to hear from them.
Is that all you have to say?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Well,
I have no idea what Rebel was saying.
No, well, it doesn't matter.
I believe that everybody on YouTube could actually hear Rebel. I was just
I'm
the only party.
You're the only one that didn't hear what he said, and that's probably for the best because
they're not here for this.
You wouldn't have liked what he said about you. But anyway, here's another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, guys. This is Phil from Missouri. How you guys doing?
How's it going?
Hanging in there.
First of all, Alex, can you hear our friend from Missouri?
I can indeed.
Okay.
Hello.
All right. What's on
your
mind?
You were talking earlier about China banning crypto coin, but also putting limits on how much time kids can spend playing video games. I don't know how they would do that, but
I heard about that.
Yeah. Also, did you hear about YouTube banning channels that are spreading vaccine misinformation?
Yeah, not just for COVID-19, but for all vaccinations. And not sure how I feel about that, because I'm sure there are some vaccinations that are bad vaccinations that are being run somewhere through some nefarious channel. I'm sure they exist, but are they just making it against their policy to criticize any vaccine, even ones in the past? Or I'm not really sure. I don't think I have enough information as to what exactly this entails.
Well, you know, the platform is a private company and everything, right? So they have that right to refuse service, I guess you'd call it. But I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's good in a way they're trying to get rid of some of this junk, but then again, you know, Where do you stop? I mean, sure these channels can start their own website up like InfoWars does.
That's what makes it not censorship, is the fact that you can always speak using your own website or your own means of reaching people. YouTube doesn't have to give you that. Facebook doesn't have to give you that. Twitter doesn't have to give you that. And it's really, you know, you're playing on their turf. I get that. If it ever becomes, if you criticize something and you get hauled off to jail for criticizing it, that's censorship, okay? That's when you don't have the right to say something, and that's not where we are now.
Yeah. The Assange deal, that's in this recent book where they, Mike Pompeo, wanted to assassinate him.
Mm-hmm.
Saying he was a, you know, he was acting as a spy, an espionage organization, and whatnot, right? But the thing is with WikiLeaks, right? They're publicizing everything they find, right? So I think that would come under the purview of journalism, even though it's crappy journalism. But
my thing that
I agree with their methods on how to get their information and everything, but you know. Having the CIA and the head of the CIA say at the time, well, we need to just shoot him in the head and get it over with. It's just...
It wouldn't have eliminated the whistleblowers, who themselves were parts of a lot of those organizations. They still would have spoken somewhere. It facilitated that, much in the way it makes Twitter or any of these other online platforms simplified and easy to share information about whatever your opinion is. Well, these were people working inside organizations who felt that these organizations had gone awry and afoul of the Constitution or the best interests of American citizens, and that they weren't being heard through the official channels they had. So, I mean, it is a stretch, certainly. Like you said, it may not have been the type of journalism that people like, but those stories would have found their way out, whether there was a convenient purveyor of that, and there was criticism about how well they filtered or edited, as we like to refer to it. That maybe is something for history, but I don't know what else was said in that book. That's the first I heard that the former Secretary of I guess state was interested in taking out someone who was already in prison.
If it can be proven that he actually did say that, I think that is a scandal, a big scandal, because it's unseemly for one thing, and it's dangerous, and it's barbaric, and we deserve better.
Yeah, I mean, sure, maybe there should be some kind of prosecution with, you know, leaking stuff out, but, you know, just going to that far, if it's like, you know, selling nuclear codes to somebody, I could kind of see some of this, but, you know, just because you don't like what was leaked out, and not what was leaked out is, hey, they got some tools to do this, that, and the other, you know, I don't think they leaked out any kind of source code or any way to get around or anything, right? Just the fact that they had the tools and so on. I think it's just like everything with the CIA is overkill. I mean, look how, you were talking earlier about, on NPR about Haiti and how the CIA went. Well, not the CIA, but how our government went down there and kind of screwed things up just, you know, so we can get cheaper sugar or whatnot. You know what I mean? And, it's just, I don't know. It's just to go and say, hey, we need to kill people because of what they know, because they told somebody else, is kind of ridiculous.
It's not a good look. No, it's not a good look. It, it makes them look like bullies, which they very well may be. And like I said, we deserve better.
And this is a certain sort of schizophrenia we have with our long-term foreign policy. I think we maybe affect an effect of our deliberative sort of government, but we can't really be counted on in various situations over the long term, because often these things change versus in an administration. There's a fair amount of incoherence, I think, and even U.S. citizens might not know, like, what their tax dollars are doing in some other country, regulating some mission that someone somewhere approved and said, yeah, this somehow passes muster with, you know, no oversight or you know, black budgets, all these things. I mean, it goes on, and I think it is really made harder when journalism and institutions that are talking about these things or shining light on this stuff, when they can't inform the people that are voting for the leadership that approves this stuff. And I think that is something that everybody in America should be very concerned about, whether you've traveled or not, whether you're really interested in geopolitics or not. Stuff goes on in our name, and we ought to take an interest. And anybody who has a story to tell from the inside that puts their life or their career, life in the context of this conversation, that they put that on the line, they should be heard, they should be supported and revered for telling the populace what will not be told.
Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult thing to do. That is worthy of attention and not constant threats. All right, listen,
well,
thanks.
Go
ahead, finish your thought, and then we're going to move on to other questions.
Well, this country's always done the kind of heavy-handed thing with the stick anyway. You know, back in the 19th century, we sent, like, warships to hang out in, you know, Tokyo Bay to open them up so they could trade with us, you know? It's why I don't get about this pushback against critical race theory. I guess the people who don't want the kids to know that, hey, you know, there are people living here before we came over here in colonies and everything. And we kind of kicked them off their land and moved them into reservations and everything. And they don't want people to hear that. They just want to hear all the great stories. Like, you know, they want to make it look like Hamilton. It's like, hey, look how great we were.
It's a simple solution. Don't let them call it critical race theory. Call it history.
Yeah.
Because it's history. That is what it is. And we should allow history to be taught in all its blemishes. That's you know, how history
works.
That's
how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how the amendments came about in the Constitution to try to fix some of that problem.
Yeah.
The people who complain about it, it's like, well, you know, we don't want to make white people look like bad guys, but you know,
well, then maybe stop being the bad guys, and that won't happen
as
much.
The Constitution, when they ratified it and everything, a black person was counted as 3/5 of a person. So how do you explain that without explaining racism?
Yeah, it's all the more reason we should teach it and be informed, and so that it instructs people's lives going forward.
But this is what Democrats need to do, which they always fail to do, is stop playing by Republicans' rules and stop saying things about critical race theory and just make it about history. This is history. We are teaching history. This is what happened in history. How can you prevent us from teaching history to our children? Period. As soon as you take the bait and start using their phrasing, it becomes a lot easier for people who don't know all the facts to simply target you as the threat. And in this particular case, those people are not the threat. The people who are the threat are the people trying to prevent history from being told, and that is what they are doing.
It's real confusing. It kind of makes me mad, too, because, you know, I had no problem learning about the Trail of Tears in school and all this sort of stuff. And this is stuff we already learned. I mean, I didn't know about the Tulsa thing until...
I didn't know about Tulsa either until very recently, and I'm ashamed.
Yeah,
but
watching Watchmen.
Yeah, I mean, so, I wasn't taught that in grade school, junior high school, or college.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that is when you walking away from that, it's asking yourself, well, why wasn't I taught this? It's like you answer your own question immediately.
Uh-huh.
You're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Think about the most meaningless thing that you've been taught that everybody knows. You know, I can't think of something offhand, but I know there are things like that everybody's taught, and something meaningful like this is just glossed over. Anyway, thanks again for the call. We're going to move on.
Please keep listening.
Right. Yes.
And call back.
Now, Alex, you know, there's a mirror behind your head, so I can tell that you're scrolling through the web, in case you thought you were doing that surreptitiously.
There's no... Actually, see what's going on behind me. Well, maybe in one of these picture frames.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm just logging on.
That's a legitimate site. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of in any way. But I just figured you should know that we can see it all.
Well, speaking of being ashamed, I am much like our caller from Missouri was ashamed. I had only learned about Oklahoma, what happened in Tulsa, from The Watchmen.
None of us knew about this. I'm glad that we're all admitting it, because literally none of us were taught this.
Yeah,
and,
I thought it had to be fake. I thought it had to be made up, that it could possibly have been that real.
No, I didn't think that. I believed it when I heard it, but I'm very surprised that it was never taught, because... That is just such an incredible story, how this thriving black community was destroyed in the early 1900s. It was just incredible.
It's absolutely horrific, terrible.
And how much else? How much else haven't we been taught from history that we have to... Juneteenth is now a thing, you know, finally. But how many people didn't know about that until recently? Okay. Are we having a phone call?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I believe there's a call on the line.
Go ahead, caller. You are on the air or on the web.
Good evening, over the hook.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria. You know, we're getting all the regular callers. I would like to ask for the next caller to be irregular, if possible. And what I mean by that is nothing to do with your diet. It has to do with not calling us each week. So I'd like to hear somebody not that I don't want to hear from you, Bobson, but I also want to hear from other people who maybe are calling for the first time. So just when Bobson leaves, please... Give us a call, 802-321-4225. Don't call before, or you'll go into some weird region where you might be able to leave a voicemail message, but we'll never get you. So, Bobson, what's going on?
Well, I have a question for you. There's recent news from New York where it said that people who are not vaccinated were going to be dismissed from healthcare occupations.
Uh-huh.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
Is correct.
People who are not vaccinated are no longer going to be allowed to work in health care service or what have you.
Yeah, in a position
idea,
of health care.
In my opinion.
Yeah, a position of healthcare where people can spread disease. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to have those people vaccinated. If they don't think it's a good idea, I'd like to ask why they're in healthcare in the first place. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I have a question related to that.
Before you get into that, Bob, since somebody has audio up high and we're hearing delay, so is that you, Alex, or is that you, Bobson? It's one of you. It's not Alex, so it must be Bobson. Okay.
Sounds like a web stream of all.
Yeah, sounds like a web stream. Slight delay.
Probably how Bobson was tuning in. So go on.
Don't hear it anymore, so that's good. Thank you.
So what I wanted to ask is, does that mean now that people who are not vaccinated are no longer going to be allowed to work in healthcare, does that mean that disabled people are only going to be able to get vaccinated AIDS in New York these days? Which is a question that one of your recent listeners of.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, disabled people need AIDS, some of them.
Right. Home health care workers.
People,
right. Oh,
are those AIDS only going to be vaccinated from now on?
That's a good question. Like one of our listeners called in about months ago.
I think this has
been
addressed.
That's what I was thinking about asking if you know anything about it.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think in weeks prior, this issue was specifically addressed in New York State, but I don't know the details on that.
Yeah,
I'm not 100%
sure. It certainly seems like this is a step in that direction if it hasn't already been crossed. So I would hope so. I would hope so.
It would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time. And I was...
Hang on.
Alex has something for you. Go ahead.
Yes, I was hoping you would call tonight. I wanted to address something specifically with you.
And, it sounds ominous somehow.
Yes, indeed it is. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was driving around here in Pennsylvania, and I saw a market, and it was labeled as a European supermarket. So I convinced my wife to go to this European supermarket with me, and it was hardly European. It was almost exclusively Bulgarian and Russian, just tons and tons of Bulgarian food at this market. I had no idea there was some kind of Bulgarian expat community.
Wow.
Over here in Pennsylvania, but I got these cookies that I absolutely loved, and I remember the name. I think it was Vafla. Is that
okay?
Sound like
yes.
A cookie, right?
Thin slices of baked what's it called? Dough with filling
like
between them, right?
On the top, right? They're wafers.
What?
They're like a wafer.
Yes, wafers in layers with filling between them, right?
Yeah, that's right. Except they're bigger and thicker than I think a usual wafer like that we would have here. And it was this gigantic box of them. They were really good.
You see, this is hackers engaging in cultural diplomacy again.
Well, there's plenty of various brands of those around here.
Uh-huh. Is Vafla the brand, or is that just the name of the type of cookie?
Vafla is just the type of the... what's
type
it called?
Cookie?
Of the dessert type thing. It's like a cookie bar or some such...
Yes. Okay. Yep.
There's various...
That makes sense. And various also got a
brands
of
them.
Hang on. You guys are talking at the same time. Alex, go ahead.
Sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to talk over you. I also got a bottle of something, I think, by the name of Ochakovsky. Are you familiar with that liquid?
I thought he was a composer.
I haven't heard the name yet.
It's that fermented Russian drink. I think it's like a kvass or something like that.
Or
what I'm talking about?
Or some such. I don't know those, and I don't know where to
buy. It's like it's a fermented drink made from bread. The woman told me that they made it from bread, and from rye bread, and it had this kind of bready. It was pretty, to my mouth, it tasted really putrid.
And then I looked this up, and apparently he was very popular in Central and Eastern Europe. Where people would make this fermented drink, it was very often safer than drinking the water because of the pH levels in it. But I wanted to know if you had this. I had read stories about, you know, kids kind of surviving off of this.
Well, there's a different fermented drink that was popular here when I was younger and before that, and it's in recent time been damaged by commercial mishandling, shall we say, by people who are looking to make quick buck. But yeah, there are certain fermented beverages that are.
Yeah, so you probably have some.
Yeah, I realize now that we've been deprived growing up of fermented beverages in this country because I can't remember a single one from my childhood.
No, nothing. I mean, because I guess they would have a very low alcohol content.
Kyle, do you remember any fermented beverages?
Like apple cider. We'd have like cider press, you know, and you have cider. That's fermented, I think, a little bit. Not quite the same.
Yeah, like depending on the cider, it's. There are types of adult ciders that the French bottle in flashes similar to what they use for champagne and such.
Well,
but yes.
Because for some reason we're talking about a Bulgarian community in Pennsylvania, Bobson, is this something that you know about, that there's a large number of Bulgarian people who live there? And Alex, is that what you're saying, that this Bulgarian supermarket exists in the middle of?
Yeah, I mean, there must be a market for people to buy Bulgarian groceries. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a Bulgarian grocery store.
If I'm ever over there, I'll try and find it and maybe enjoy some imports that are less likely to be obtained elsewhere.
Is this place a chain or is it just one place?
It's just one place.
Oh, interesting.
It's a standalone store. Yeah.
Does it have Cyrillic writing on the outside?
Which part of Pennsylvania is it?
It's a European supermarket. I think it's around Bartonsville or Tannersville.
The Ville section.
Pennsylvania.
Yes.
The only place in Pennsylvania I know of is what's it called? The large city there.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
I was going to say Scranton. And then I was going to say Allentown, but I guess that's also a big city.
Yes. Pittsburgh as well.
Pittsburgh.
Big city in Pennsylvania.
That's right, yeah.
We've
talked about the Midwest enough for one night, I think. So, Bobson, anything else for you?
Is Pennsylvania in the Midwest?
Oh, it's in the Midwest. I think it's in the Midwest.
The West is it? The Midwest, I would think. It's very, very close to Ohio. But Bob, I wanted to ask, any recommendations for something that I should look for in terms of a dessert?
Okay.
Go in there and ask.
Well, I don't know if they supply that, they get the brand there, but there's a brand of waffle which is called Focus, which is like the word for magic trick.
Okay.
It's a bit, if you don't read Cyrillic, I don't know how to describe the writing to you. It's a bit tricky.
Yeah, it would be a C-T-O-K-C or something? Stokos?
No. The first letter is similar to the Greek phi, if a large phi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's
so it's
F sound. And then it's O-K-Y-C in terms of how the letters work.
I feel stupid right now.
Bobson should be giving us Cyrillic lessons
every
week.
He should be giving us Cyrillic lessons on Off the Hook Overtime.
We'd be much more educated.
I don't know how we would do that on the radio, but we should. We should.
It would happen the same on the radio if you were in the studio right now.
That's true.
I think.
If we were in the studio, we'd be far away from a Bulgarian supermarket. I can tell you that right now because I don't know any of them in New York City.
Yeah, this is true. Well, look, when you come over to visit, we'll be sure to make a trip to the Bulgarian supermarket, and we'll look for this mysterious Stokos brand of vafla.
Or I could bring some over.
Yeah, how about that?
You could bring some over. Yeah, that would be even better.
would be even better.
Wow. I think you need to make some more trips to this place and just bring some products online so we can talk about them and make fun of them.
Okay, but we'll do that. We'll have our considered opinion, and then Bobson's rebuttal as an expert.
Right.
Weigh in.
Okay, that would be off the air.
We are off the air. We're not on any air now, unless somebody's rebroadcasting us.
I mean, I'd like to hear if people would prefer us talking about Bulgarian groceries.
Overtime could just become a Bulgarian grocery show. I mean, that's happened before, so why not?
Sure. Yeah.
Only so much technology. Only so much technology we can take.
The radio equivalent to clipping coupons.
Did you say coupons?
Yeah, it's a coupon.
You say coupons? Why do you say it that way? It's coupons, not coupons. I mean, it's O-U, C-O-U. Well,
coupon.
Then again.
Sorry, coupon.
The way you pronounce Spokane, I can never understand.
Spokane.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. K-A-N-E is Kane. All right, you know what, Bobson, we're going to bicker about our own language now for a while. But thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
I'll be listening on YouTube.
All right, and greetings to everybody in Bulgaria from us.
Thanks. Have a wonderful evening, folks.
And a wonderful morning to you.
Thank you for the show. I'm sorry about the situation your friend has found themselves in.
Well,
you spoke on the radio about...
As long as you know the story and are able to keep up with it, I think that's something. I think that counts. That matters.
Well, you people are the only way for me to be able to keep up with it. So I'm waiting to hear more next week or whenever things become clear with the trial and all that.
And we'll try to keep people updated as we learn more. And the 20th Country side as well. Anyway, good hearing from you. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Same here. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening, too.
All right. And I guess now's the time for that irregular call. To call in 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK is our phone number. And, oh, wow, time really flies when we're doing radio, online or offline. What do you think about this hack of Epic? Anonymous hackers dump 150 gigabytes of names, passwords, and addresses of far-right website admins. The massive data dump could take years to properly analyze. It includes names, passwords, and addresses of administrators of far-right sites. They all use the Washington-based web host Epic, E-P-I-K, which was founded by a guy whose name is actually Rob Monster. Epic has hosted websites like B-Chan, The Daily Stormer, Gab, and Parler. The domain registrar's weak security standards left its customers vulnerable, that's according to the hackers. Anonymous published the 150 gigabytes of data for public download on September 13th, with a letter urging researchers to trace the worst trash the Internet has to offer. The leak has already led to the identification of some far-right activists. Ali Alexander tried to hide his involvement in January 6 protests shortly after the Capitol riot turned deadly, according to a data analysis by the Daily Dot, and I'm not sure why that's in the summation here. I don't think it has anything to do with the rest of the story. That's interesting. Interesting to see.
It's probably related.
It's from the Daily Mail, yes. But it was listed as one of the items, so I'll look at that a little bit more carefully. Let's see who's on the telephone. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
A few quick thoughts about email dot addressing and plus addressing.
Actually, sorry, I cut you off at the beginning. Could you reintroduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Pete from the Hudson Valley.
Oh, okay. Hi, Pete. How you doing? I think you're an irregular caller. You haven't called us too much recently, have you?
Not too much.
Okay.
Two times in the past.
What's on your mind?
It's been a while. So just a few quick thoughts about email dot addressing and plus addressing. So
sure.
I know plus addressing appears in the email spec or the RFC, and it should work with most email providers. I'm not sure about the dot. I've been driving, so I haven't had a chance to see if that appears in the spec.
Yeah, don't email while driving.
But something I like to do is use a random plus filter whenever I sign up for a service, and it adds a layer of security because if someone knows your email address, can't try to do like a brute force attack and log in as you because they don't know what the plus is necessarily. And it's also surprising how many services don't recognize plus as a valid email character because they use, you know, some basic regex.
Right, right.
But, yeah, it's worth trying. What I do is add it to my password manager. So I have, you know, basically a custom email address for each site alongside my custom password. But, yeah, that was it. Just wanted to throw that out there.
All right. Well, thanks. That's very, very helpful. Drive safe.
All right.
Take care. I think we have time for maybe one more phone call.
That was really interesting. That was a very compressed news alert. So
yeah.
I'm fascinated, and I want to know more about just exactly what the plus scheme is. From what I understand, it's basically just like separating names with a dot, but you could add in a plus. But he's talking about sites not accepting that expression or that character. And,
well, it's generally not accepting and ignoring and,
yeah.
and bouncing and things like that. But, it's, you know, experiment. You know, try different things.
We'd love to hear more about this. Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing I think is very important is be sure to use two-factor authentication. I say this because a friend of mine recently found themselves targeted by an angry ex who somehow still had possession of a laptop that allowed automatic login to Gmail. And with that, they were able to gain all kinds of information about them, their significant others, their family. We're talking about financial statements. We're talking about voicemails. We're talking about emails. People put way too much on these services. But if you're going to do that, okay, at least have it so that whenever you log into this particular system, you have to verify that it's actually you. And the way that works is you enter your password, and then you get a text message on your phone. So somebody will have to have stolen your phone and have a way into your Gmail or equivalent account. Now, that's assuming you don't change your passwords. But, you know, there are many shortcuts that people install to make things easier. Wouldn't it be great if my laptop just always automatically accessed this because who else is going to be using it? Well, if somebody else is using it, then they have access and they have permanent access to all the data that they download from that point. If you have two-factor authentication, that won't happen. It doesn't mean your data is completely safe. There's always the possibility of break-ins on the other side and all kinds of other compromises, but at least this very common way of getting information, getting your data, will be thwarted.
And it's widely available. It's been made very, very accessible on most of, especially email providers, like mm-hmm. web hosting, whatever provider you've chosen, they are they really encourage people to take advantage of this. Banking sites, stuff like anything that is critical,
because
to
they
support.
Know how insecure they are. They really do,
and it makes it a little bit more complicated for you to be exposed in the way you described, like an ex. Oh my gosh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And it's not like, you know, if you cut off access, they didn't already get all the information because you store so much on their servers. I don't understand that. I mean, at least, look, if you're not running your own email server, fine. But you can at least download the emails to your local machine. There's no reason they all have to be on there for years and years and years.
No, not fine. I'm going to interrupt you. I totally disagree. It's not fine. More people need to do it so mm-hmm. that it continues to be developed and it can be treated seriously by the hegemons and the webmail providers that do crazy things that make, you know, email that isn't from one of their services harder. They even compete. I think Yahoo would get in little tiffs with Google's mail service, and they would refuse mail or have it not work. The less people that get curious about this stuff, the more those alternatives are going to be the only things left. And it is, yes, it's work. It's harder. It might take some reading or a whole group of people to read and try to figure out what works best for their organization. But you end up in a better place in the long term, and you're not...
Yeah.
You're not trusting a third party by default. You're trusting your gumption and know-how and maybe even building a community along the way. So I cannot more strongly encourage people to do it for fun. Do it alongside your other accounts just to see if you can do it. I remember when building machines and installing OSs and stuff was a little bit more complicated than it is now. And I would challenge myself just to see if I could do it
mm-hmm.
with whatever OS. I didn't even make an account on the OSs. I would just try it out to see if I get hardware to accept whatever distribution I was interested in at the time and to see what it was like. That is a curiosity and experimentation that is so needed. And getting people who have no idea about what I'm talking about in front of a machine and trying this stuff out,
right?
Maybe before they're on some track or some formal career path, just to experiment and to know. And it's empowering to know that you can host something yourself or to build a computer program yourself or to run a web service or something independent of other people. That's incredibly empowering. And I think we have taken convenience so often in to our own detriment, to real detriment. It's not good for our edification. We lack control and configurability, customization, the granularity of what is accepted and what isn't as a regular expression or an actual character. All of these things you put in someone else's control, and they make those decisions for you.
Right.
And we are at a point in time where there are so many other parts of the world that do not operate this way. We need to get with a program. We need to encourage this stuff. We need to be much more capable and less dependent with technology.
And don't be afraid to break things. I mean, it's your machine, so, okay, what happens if I do this, if I run this program? Okay, you know, I completely nuked the operating system. I'll just reinstall it. You know, that's how you learn. That's how you learn by experimenting, occasionally doing the wrong thing, and doing it better the next time.
I can't tell you how many times a failure, seeing what it looks like when something goes completely wrong
mm-hmm.
on an operating system, seeing some weird part of a BIOS or I mean, that's just little maintenance things. I mean, there's so much more in computing and telephony and programming, but those things build your understanding of anticipating how a machine or a system might fail or might work under different scenarios. And if you've seen those things, if you've recovered from those things, you are much better equipped to build and design and take on harder challenges and more complex things with the confidence that you can possibly recover from it or that you can anticipate a scenario where something might go wrong and plan for it.
Right, right. Don't just blindly follow the rules. Know why you're following the rules. Know what the consequences are of not following the rules.
And see value, yeah. See mm-hmm. value in exploring the technology, not just, you know, consuming it and what is it doing for me at this moment.
Right. But see, now we have the freedom to be able to do these things locally on our own machines. So we're not hurting anybody by trying certain command structures that would crash a system somewhere else. But yes, as you say, you learn more about the design, about how to make things better. And that's what it's all about. If you just blindly follow the instructions, you're never really learning anything about how the systems work. And that makes it so that you're completely under somebody else's control, and you have to accept whatever decisions they make, and they're often not the decisions that you want.
Yeah, you're worse off. You end up with less in the end. I mm-hmm. think there's so many benefits to that independence and confidence, it's a whole passionate area of interest that I would love to go into.
I think this is an excellent stopping point for this week's Overtime. Alex, did you have anything that you wanted to add in these closing moments?
No, just, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you all again soon.
You can write to us, oth@2600.com, and you can also register your meeting if you want to have a 2600 meeting this coming Friday, first Friday of the month. Write to us, meetings@2600.com, or go to the website, 2600.com/meetings to see if you're already listed, or you can use Twitter and send a direct message to 2600meetings, and the folks there will be happy to respond and help get your meeting started. All right, I think that's it then. No closing words.
Thanks everyone for calling and listening. I think we're still at Hacker Radio Show on Twitter.
Yeah, that's
well.
Our that's our Twitter.
All along, and of course, 2600.com for the latest news and information about our next show.
All right. Night, everybody.